Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder, pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here is your host, the Millennial Dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back to another episode of the Millennial Dentist Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about how I failed with an associate.
I think fail is a very harsh word.
Yeah.
It's you lost your first associate?
I lost my first associate. There's aspects of it that I look at as fail. But anyways, without further ado, let's jump into it. I have my special guest, T-Bone, with three dentists.
I'm forcing you to do this.
No, I'm glad we're doing it. This will be fun to talk about. So, let's jump right into it. I mean, obviously, you know, you've had a number of associates through the years, and I would never call any of those relationships failures. Honestly, I think you learn from everything. And one of the things you've taught me that I do think I've done well at is, you know, this idea that you're going to find the perfect whatever, the perfect time to do this, the perfect time to do the CE, the perfect hire. You know, the goal should be that we always move forward. You know, yeah. We get forward.
We get started as fast as we can.
Yeah. And so there's things obviously I would do different. You know, we've hired two associates now and one's going to be leaving and so let's talk about that.
Well, let's start with what went well for you.
Well, I think, you know, I mean, at the end of the day,
And Jackson was your second associate?
Yeah, Jackson was our second associate. So we hired Dr. Megan up, I guess now it'll be 3 years.
Has it been that long? Wow.
Yeah, and it's been great. And you know, I think what we did well with Megan specifically was we hired for a very specific need and niche. We knew, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, of what the practice needs versus like what you're hiring for. And then Jackson, you know, Jackson kind of, we knew we needed more volume from a standpoint of we needed more people to check hygiene, to do the restorative dentistry. And we also knew that Megan didn't necessarily want to get into surgery.
Right.
And then, you know, honestly, the challenge that we knew we were going to have with Jackson from day one was we knew him very well. He was like family for my dad. And so it was like a no-brainer hire, but it was very obvious from the get-go that he wanted more than being an associate. And not that... And it never even got to a conversation of like being a partner or like that, mainly because I think he knew that what he wanted wasn't necessarily a partnership. It was to call the shots.
Okay. He wanted to be the sole owner.
Yeah.
The primary owner.
Yeah. And so that was something we probably saw from day one. Do I need to drink that water?
No, I was just giving you some water. I don't want to drink it.
Oh.
I don't want to get whatever disease you have.
Know. Yeah. So I think that was one of the challenges. Like is on something we knew that from day one, that could be a hurdle.
Okay. So many people would say, well, then why did you hire somebody that you knew wanted to be their own owner or wanted to be the king of the castle? And I don't mean that in a negative way, but just wanted to be the boss.
Well, I think they're
probably right. And how long did Jackson last?
So Jackson started in 18 months.
18 months. I'd call that success personally.
Well, and I would too. I mean, like if you look at it from a brass tacks numbers standpoint, I mean, Jackson did, we had one full year, right? Mm-hmm. He worked his first, came out of school, worked with us for 6 months. And now we've had one calendar year and he's leaving. And this calendar year, he'll do $750,000 for our practice. So that, to your point of getting started, it's moved the needle along to where now
you need two associates.
Yeah. And we've got a book of business that needs to be done next year to fill that. So I think it definitely proved the concept and got us moving, but I wasn't as intentional with that hire. And I think that probably, you know, bit me a little bit.
Okay. But I would argue it didn't bite you though.
It did. I guess it depends on what's the success, right? I mean, most of us like, cause we have this idea that we want to have like a long-term associate, right? Like,
But I believe that that's what we all want. But that fallacy to a certain degree has to go away because, look, people stick around where they like to be. Okay. Either they don't want to be an owner. Okay. They have no motivation. They're deathly afraid of taking the risks and spending the money of what it takes. Or they have, you know, dentistry isn't their primary gig or, you know, or the number one priority. And so, you know, I look at it as if you can get 18 months and he was the add-on dentist when you first started.
Yeah.
So you proved that you have this need. Yes, it always sucks to lose somebody, but the practice is in a better place. And what I'll argue more importantly is you're not losing any skill set that you don't already have or that you can't replace relatively easily.
And so that I would say we've done well. It was a good and bad, right? Like ideally you want someone to kind of level up to do skills that are harder to get. And at this point, Jackson had just started doing implants and some of that stuff. So relatively, it's something that we can either pick up quickly that won't take a ton of time, or it could be passed on to.
So let me ask you some questions about what went well. Did he fit the culture of your patients and your practice?
Yeah, I think that was a great fit. Okay. I mean, patients liked him. Our team members liked him.
Okay. So
he bought into the general systems, I think. I think he was probably a little bit too much like my dad, probably on some aspects of things. But
was he comfortable in being, you know, not being the number one in terms of getting the clinical care? Did he push real hard to try to do things he didn't have the right to do? Or was he kind of did he stay in his lane?
That's a hard question to answer. And I think it's something we should talk about for a minute and spend some time on, because, you know, there's this dichotomy of new dentists are always going to want to, and I use the word new dentist as the associate or whatever, they're always going to want to push themselves to do more if they're wired that way, right?
Well, not even that. By definition, an associateship is an apprenticeship.
Right. So there's a natural level of like, I want to learn to do this, I want to learn to do this. Now, the flip side is it's easy for owner dentist to look at associate dentist as someone who will kind of do the stuff they don't want to do so they can cherry pick harder, more profitable, bigger producing procedures. And then they're never ready or they're never going to do it in the same way that I would do it. And that's a hard thing, because if the bar is like, we'll use our practice. If the bar is my dad's clinical ability, if that's the standard of care, that's going to be really difficult for someone to ever live up to without time.
Well, look, it's, you know, your dad's what, 30 years in now?
Yeah.
30 years in. Lots of CE, lots of energy, lots of excitement about dentistry, continuously learning at a good efficiency and speed. Now, what I would say is a better way to look at that or explain that is your dad has set bars within certain procedures, and associates need to meet that bar of those procedures. In other words, they need to do crowns as clinically competent as your dad or you. They need to do, restorative dentistry. Maybe they're slightly slower, maybe in some of those things, but their outcomes are as good and the patient experience is as good.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, I mean, you don't want to have patients coming back for multiple appointments, multiple follow-ups or getting phone calls. I mean, I'm with you on all those things. I just think that it's always a challenge. It will always be a challenge for doctors to balance what they want to do and what you're willing to give them.
Yeah.
And then
did you guys struggle in that? Do you think Jackson wanted to do more than you guys were ready to let them do?
It was honestly, we're a partnership, so we have our own struggles. And that, like, dad and I don't think dad and I were ever aligned with that with Jackson. And I think that's where he suffered. Is I think that dad and I had this alignment of like, I was always willing to give him more benefit of the doubt with the expectation that there'd be more handholding, just because I knew that kind of in my mind, in my business mind, that helps facilitate more long-term growth. Whereas dad was definitely more along the lines of like, I want him to be clinically there before he gets it.
Yeah. So that's the chicken or the egg, right?
Right. And the other part of this that becomes challenging is like, and this is good for associate doctors to hear too. This idea that we are the mentor is important, because like if you're an associate, like that's something to look for. But you have to understand and respect that when I mentor you for a procedure and I block time on my schedule to help you do something that you're getting the production from, it's kind of biting me at both ends. It's holding me back from production, and then I'm paying out production to you for stuff. And
but,
so,
but that's part, hard. That's part of the apprenticeship.
I don't disagree.
And part of the practice growth.
But that was hard for my dad to like, that was a hard pill to swallow of like, well, if I'm going to block my morning to help someone do this, yet I could be doing it. It's.
Yeah. But it's that's tough. A mindset he has to, that's a mindset anyone has to understand. You know, that part of being an owner dentist to associates with associates is that you have to spend the time to mentoring them. And part of mentoring them is watching them do cases. Now, I think part of the challenges that we all have is that we watch them clinically, but we prepare for them. And I think the hard part isn't the clinical dentistry, it's the mental preparation that goes into any of these complex procedures.
I don't disagree.
And
I mean, let's take Megan's case this week, right? She was doing an 8-unit anterior case that, frankly, at the end of the day, it's a matter of prepping.
Well, in that case, it was easy. They're the existing grounds.
Right. Like it's literally taking off and prepping teeth. Like there really shouldn't be a truth. Having said that, there's a level of pre-planning and execution and then post-communication with your lab. And those two parts to me are as important.
If not more important.
If not more important than the actual, I mean, and that's what I told my dad. I was like, Dad, at the end of the day, like I'm just prepping the teeth.
Right.
Like the lab's the one that makes me look good. If I give them, some level of good palate to work with, they're going to make it look good. And then I got to make sure that I've seen the potential problems that I could run into in my preparation. And then ultimately that will lead to good execution.
Yeah. You know, no question. All right, so what didn't go so well for you guys?
Well, one of those was that I should have taken more of a mentor role, meaning that like a lot of times what would happen is I would diagnose dentistry, I would give away the dentistry, and then there would be an expectation that my dad would be the one to mentor it. And then dad would look at that and say, well, I don't think they're ready for that. And then there'd be this animosity between them. And then I would be kind of the odd man out because well, I'm the one that gave it to him. Right. So then I kind of look like the good guy, but then he's the bad guy. So like that wasn't a good setting.
Let me ask you this. What is the answer to this never-ending problem for all of us mentors? Is that, hey, I want you to do this. I want to be there for you, but it's costing me money and I'm not making money. Would it be fair that maybe the first couple of cases you split the revenue?
I thought that's a great idea.
Whose idea was that?
What was your idea?
Okay, I just want to make sure.
How was your idea? No, and, I think it's a good idea.
And maybe 60% of the revenue goes to the associate and 40% goes to the mentor.
I think it's a great idea.
And maybe even 70-30, you know, something. Because
I mean,
I want everybody to have, to me, a good relationship is when both parties have skin in the game.
Yep.
You know, And they have to win, right? I mean, it's to me, it's not fair. Like one of the things that bothers me in my office that I've told my two doctors that I'm not going to do this much longer is that they diagnose implants, but then I do all the real diagnosis planning, surgical guide creation, everything to where all they'd have to do is literally place the implant. And
now what I would tell you is that that's no different than any other doctor that's a solo doctor out there that farms out to a lab. Your lab's just in-house.
Yes, but the difference is I do all the planning. Like they,
so would a lab. For a lot of doctors, they get on there and they're like, yeah, that looks good.
Okay, I got
you. So I think if anything, to your point, like maybe that you there should be a lab fee.
I don't care about the fee. I told them that
yours is the longer-term vision of why I want you invested in the planning.
But not just that, I also get it that, listen, I'm in the office 2 days a week. When I come into work. I don't have time to make your lab cases anymore, right? So either you need to farm this out to a lab, okay, and pay the lab bill, or you guys, what I want is I want you guys to learn how to do this yourself because it will make you better clinicians. Because without doubt, about 35, a third of the time, I would find cases where like I think you're missing something here that could turn out to be something more than you're ready to handle. Or I would say, hey, I'm seeing this. If this happens, what's your plan of action to handle it? And they've never been in that situation, right? And then it turns into not only do I have to plan the case out, now I've got to find a time to be here for them to do it. But again, that's part of the game. I accept it to a certain degree, but I'm not going to enable it to where at some point I want them to look at it like, what if you were running this practice without me? How would this get done?
Right.
And to your point, they would have sent it to a lab.
I just feel like we have to set better expectations.
Yeah.
And that's something to me that I will do differently with.
All right. So let's be more specific. Like, can you?
Yeah. One would be dad wants Jackson to want it more.
Yeah.
And at some point, then you have to.
But that's an age issue and cultural and boomer issue for him.
What would be better to do is to just say, Jackson, one of my expectations is that before we meet together to go over the case, that I want you to have looked at it and come up with your plan.
Yeah.
So that you basically can tell me what your plan is, and then we can discuss if there's anything I see differently. Not we're going to get together to plan it together.
Yeah.
And so then
it's essentially me doing all the work.
Right. Cause that's what then happens. And then dad gets frustrated because he's like, he wasn't prepared. I'm like, well, you never
told
have
him.
You ever made it right? Because if you just expect him to do that, he may or may not. Well, do that.
Me and your dad's generation would be prepared. I would never go to a round or something like this, not prepared. I couldn't imagine.
But we have to be okay with things being different and then not being the same. And that's my thing is if you truly want associateships to work, you have to realize that those doctors aren't you. They're not wired the way you are. They don't think the way you think. And that's nothing negative. I'm saying that's just a personality thing. Like
it's a reality.
Yeah. There would be huge issues we would have if I was your associate. Oh, right.
1,000%.
So I'm saying, but that's not. So the point is you have to, there's always going to be some level of compromise. And that I think the lack of communication, lack of setting expectations is really where I wish we had done things differently. And that starts with dad and I being on the same page or a partnership if you're in that situation. And then if you're not, you get to call all the shots. Then it would be communicating that down of what you expect them to do in return for doing this. And I have been bad about not setting those expectations.
All right. So one of the things that we wrote on the board was understanding the practice needs versus what the associate is capable and or willing or desiring to handle. How have you learned from this experience and that?
Well, so this kind of ties into I think the other thing that we struggled with is that we put Jackson in situations that he probably wasn't ready for because the practice needed it. And therefore it created these situations to happen where there was controversy or frustration because, if you're an associate and you get the opportunity to do something,
you want
to
do it.
Be amped. Yeah. And then if that gets taken away from you, that creates a.
Yeah. It's a Debbie Downer.
That's a Debbie Downer for sure. But the reality was, is it probably maybe shouldn't have gotten to you in the first place, but just because of the volume of what the practice needs, it created that scenario. And so I think for anybody hiring an associate, you always have to think about, what is it that I'm trying to accomplish and what is the need and does the dentist fit the need? Megan has been I think she would agree, it's been a really successful relationship over the past couple of years. And that's because it was the need was very laid out. It was spelled out and she fit the bill of what that was. And so it's been good. Whereas Jackson was kind of always this limbo of but we need someone to kind of do all this more surgery stuff. He wants to do it, but then clinically he needs more reps.
Yeah. And more training.
So it's just,
to me, that's the hard part is, hey, you need more reps and you need more training. So training and reps are sometimes the same, but at the same time, I always say my practice isn't your residency. Right.
Yeah.
And so there's a certain level of training that I think people don't understand the value of training in terms of organizing your thoughts, getting mentally prepared, understanding what goes into these cases and how to deal with complications. And then the reps kind of come along with that. And I always think that the training comes first to show people that you've put the effort in to at least learn. And then the reps are about proving that you have the actual skill set to deliver. And then it kind of just keeps falling. And then you have to keep learning. So after you learn how to extract and graft and place simple implants, you can't just think, hey, I'm done. And now I'm going to get to do more complex implant care. You got to go and learn the next level of care, right?
Right.
So
we probably, I pushed him further faster than my dad would have liked him to have been pushed based off some of that stuff and based what the practice needs. So I think you got to look at what you're trying to accomplish there. And, you know, and to me, if you're an associate, like that's something really important that you look for, right? Is you look for, does the skill set that I have and I bring to the table, does it complement what the practice needs
and where I'm trying to get to?
Yeah. Because there's tons of opportunity here to do more surgical type stuff because our practice needs it, but there's going to be an expectation that you're going to have to invest a lot more time and money into getting to do that.
Yeah. And I think the other kind of the counterpoint, not counterpoint, but the overlooked point to that is sometimes people, hey, I want to do the surgery, but the practice also needs the restorative work done too. So you can't have like, oh, I'm going to only do this. The practice has a need to do the restorative work. So there's got to be a portion of that. It's got to be done well, be done right.
And so to that note, like, I think one thing we did do well, we've done well with all of the associates we've hired is like, part of being an associate here means that you're going to see emergencies. They're like, we're going to have basically a block, you know, some like an hour a day, basically, mm-hmm. where you're going to see their emergencies or some sort of limited exam, because that's one, how you grow your book of business. And because that helps serve the practice needs. So like, that's a trade-off that may be nothing. And then you could use that hour to learn or mm-hmm. do better hygiene checks or whatever. Like, that's something I think we've done well in setting the expectation, or like, you know, that our doctors are going to have one column, right? Like, they're going to work out of one chair. I think we've done some good things as far as setting the expectations, and that's ultimately allowed them to succeed, right? I mean, to me, to have two associates in their second years, you know, producing around $750,000, that's a win for them. That's a win for us.
It's a win for everybody.
Yeah. And so, well, I think that's good.
I know you've been hard on yourself, and I would tell you, you should be harder on yourself if Jackson left for another associate position, but
sure.
Jackson left to go acquire practice, and I'm super excited for him. I think he is better prepared for that situation now after 18 months of being in your practice.
Without a doubt.
Clinically, he's better, having seen how a practice runs. Hopefully he's taken the opportunity to understand some of the workings of a practice. So what's next? So now you're a dentist short.
Well, it's going to be, so Jackson, you know, told us, he was like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. And so like, that's great. And then a couple weeks later he had a practice. So then we kind of, and where, you know, another thing I think we have done well is we've tried to always kind of keep that other eye on the future, what's coming down the pipe. And we still knew that we still have this need in our practice for a kind of more of an advanced skill set dentist, that someone who's already got IV sedation and can mm-hmm. do some of these things. So we had an ad out actually for a dentist.
For a third associate.
Yeah, third associate. And I had gotten some resumes, none of which really I felt like fit the bill for that role.
And you weren't in a terrible hurry
either. Yeah. So I was just kind of I was just kind of sitting there. And then this one girl actually, she kind of
lady.
This one lady, woman. I mean, woman. Amber's great. She reached out again actually, to kind of follow up with her resume and say, hey, like I applied here. She got her emails, like, you know, I really wanted just to connect and, you know, touch base. And that was about the time that Jackson, he had actually found an office. So we knew that this timeline was speeding up pretty quickly. Yeah. So her kind of persistence and looking was like, okay, well, yeah, why don't you come in and meet the team? And honestly, she came in and the team loved her. And, you know, there was just good chemistry pretty quickly as far as like personality and whatnot and fit. And she's definitely not going to be a immediate replacement of everything he was doing. I mean, she's done some implant training, but she's never placed an implant. So there's some things like that will be different, but she's been practicing for 10 months. Mm-hmm. So she's not straight out of school. Yeah, she's coming from corporate, so she's got a lot of volume that she's mm-hmm. kind of gotten through some
things. Bad habits, probably.
Some bad habits
for us at least.
And no CEREC experience, so that'll mm-hmm. be, you know, for us in an associate position, like that's your bread and butter. So there'll be some hurdles, but I think us being relatively quick to react to understanding, like, hey, we've got $750,000 of production that we've got to backfill. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're going to have to pick it up. Megan has had to pick it up. And that's not something that like we're wanting to do.
No, because you got your own book of business.
Yeah. And then we, the other kind of the plot thickens here is we had actually already hired, we've already hired another associate. Mm-hmm. And Sarah, who's graduating in May and then starts in July. So that'll be, you know, we'll have three associates plus the two of us. And then the three of them will really be, you know, for the most part, running the general practice and allowing Dad and I to kind of run more of the surgery stuff. So it puts us in a unique position now, because now come July, we're probably a little over associated, mm-hmm. so to speak, in the general practice, but it's going to also allow us to prepare for, you know, leveling up Megana. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been very intentional with her about having conversations.
Well, she's starting to do the tongue tie. She's starting to do some cosmetic cases,
right?
You know, because she's got to level up.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think Amber has she's done a lot of extractions being in kind of the corporate world, and
she's not ripped out teeth.
Yeah. She's ripped a lot of teeth, but she's done some grafting, not how we would do it. But point being is she's at least shown interest and knows that she enjoys that and would like to do more of it. So, you know, if we could get her to even the point where she was comfortable doing, you know, simple tooth replacement therapy and green light cases, like mm-hmm. that would be great. Right. So now you start to segment out people to where, okay, now it can be very possible for them to do it. And then, it's going to continue to allow Dad and I to not feel the pressure to have to get drawn back in. Right. Right. To kind of maintain the vision that we're doing out there. So I think there's lots of good things that are going to be happening. And honestly, the biggest is it gives us any new team member is always a reset.
Right.
You get to say, what did I do bad? What did I do good? And what can I do differently now? And so I think I'm excited because I think that just by the nature of Jackson being here for 18 months, Amber will have a better experience as an associate. And so will Sarah.
And then 5 years from now, the next year, everybody keeps getting better and better.
Yeah. So I'm excited for both of us. You know, it was kind of like, you know, the first initial instinct is always like, gosh, man, you want to build this culture that people just want to be there. And then to your point, I should be proud on one hand because he feels confident and excited that he can go out and, you know, and do it and continue the concepts that we want to do and level up. Right. I mean, ultimately what we're trying to do is level up people.
Yep.
That's like what you and I are passionate about. And whether that's team members or associates, nothing should make us, you know, I told Jackson, I said, on some level, I'll grade myself because if you go and do well, like, to me, that's a good sign, a reflection that, you know, what you learned here had some impact on it. So
absolutely. Well, I'm excited for you. I'm excited for you to keep getting more experience. I think at some point you'll understand some of my frustrations I've had over the years.
Yes.
You know, it's
I have a better respect for it now.
Yeah. After 3 years of doing it. Yeah. Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to give you guys a call to action. If you want to level up yourself, especially if you're an associate or a practice owner and you're worried about what the economy is going to do, what I can tell you that I did back in 2008, 2009, when we went through what I hope we don't go through again, a much deeper, the Great Recession, is that I learned to bring more and more procedures in the practice. And so I think that's what we're going to have another reset of, is bringing in more and more procedures into the practice. And if you want to learn implant dentistry, at 3D Dentist, we have amazing beginner live patient implant training. And if you want to level up your implant training and learn how to do more advanced grafting, internal, external sinus lifts, and all on X full arch cases, we have live patient training programs for that. All you have to do is contact Meredith at 3D-dentists.com, and she'll be happy to set up a call with you and go over what we do and how we do it, and if you're a good fit for that or not. And hopefully you enjoy that. So anything else from you, Sully?
That's it, T-Bone.
All right. Glad thanks, everybody.
Here. Work smarter, not harder. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.